Today is January 27th, 2016, and this is episode number 343 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, rodeo specialist. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
You know, I'm not surprised that you're the rodeo specialist.
I am.
Are you a space cowboy?
Nope, just the rodeo specialist.
Huh. Well, okay, now you have something to work towards.
Some call me the master of love.
Huh. I always heard that you were Maurice.
Gangsta of love. I didn't even get the quote right. Oh, how lame. Gangsta of love.
Yeah, but you know,
I
was able to roll with it.
It was not gangsta of love, which is what Google was returning. It was gangster of love, because gangsta was not a thing.
It wasn't a thing yet
when that song was released in the 70s.
Right.
Just saying.
Still.
Anywho, Steve Miller. Yay!
Yay! All right. Well, that was a great show. We should do this again next week.
we really should. I don't know anyone should let us, but we should.
I don't know. I know better than to question things like this.
Yeah, fair enough. So, earnings report. Yesterday, Apple did its earnings report.
Right. First quarter, 2016.
The December quarter, first fiscal quarter.
Yes, first fiscal quarter.
December quarter of 2015, which is Apple's first fiscal quarter. They do that fiscal year thing.
Yeah. Which is great for them and just confusing for everyone else. But
yeah,
there you go.
Whatever. So Apple had a record quarter and the stock's down.
Yeah. Now, as far as record quarter, it wasn't just like a record for Apple. It was like a record for everyone, wasn't it? Their earnings, wasn't it higher than any single quarter compared to anyone else?
It may have been. Apparently you saw that and I didn't.
And I don't remember where I saw that.
It's certainly possible. Apple does make just a ridiculous amount of money. So Apple turned in $75.9 billion of revenue, which is a record. And earnings, it's a profit to you and me, mm-hmm. of $18.4 billion, which is earnings per share of $3.28. Also a record for Apple. Last year's December, Apple did $74.6 billion in revenue with earnings per share of $3.06.
So they, what it comes down to is they can't spend money as fast as they make it.
No, Apple really can't. But note that while those were all records, they were just barely records. And for Apple, that's kind of like, squeaking through the finish line. But even still, that's not why the stock is down.
So why is the stock down?
The stock is down because of Apple's guidance. Apple only guides one quarter out, which means that the guidance that Apple released yesterday is for the March quarter, which is the quarter that we're currently in.
Right. So when they offer guidance, what they're doing is setting expectations for the next earnings report.
Right. Now, it used to be, once upon a time, Apple's guidance was a joke. Under Peter Oppenheimer, Apple sandbagged regularly. It was actually ridiculous and, quite frankly, in my opinion, unprofessional. Became a parlor game the parlor game for Apple's guidance was always to figure out just how much Peter Oppenheimer was sandbagging. And in the last couple of years of Peter's tenure as CFO, that policy shifted, stated, like Apple actually, Peter Oppenheimer actually said that from now on, we're going to be offering guidance that we actually think we can hit, that we will hit, which was a good thing. It was a good thing. The sandbagging was just, you know, the sandbagging was really cool for a while, but it just.
Then it got old.
Yeah, it old, pointless, and childish, in my opinion. So, whatever. Glad that Apple doesn't do that anymore. So, Apple's guidance for the March quarter was revenues between $50 and $53 billion, which is, you know, a lot of money. But yes. In the a year ago quarter, Apple did... golly, what the... Oh my goodness, now I don't remember. March quarter 2015, Apple.
The good news is we always have this information right in front of us, ready to go when we do a show.
Yes, we do. Apple had $58 billion, that's it, $58 billion in revenue and $13.6 billion in profit. Actually, Apple didn't actually guide for earnings or earnings per share for the March quarter. They just guided for revenues. So $50 and $53 billion is actually lower than it was last year.
Okay. So Apple is giving everyone a heads up that year over year, they won't be bringing in quite as much money as they, they just won't be bringing in quite as much money.
Right. And Apple, Apple hasn't done that in a long time. A very, very long time.
So does this have investors worried?
I don't think anyone's worried about Apple. It's more about adjusting their expectations for what Apple's going to do, because Apple also guided for lower iPhone sales. And that hasn't happened since the iPhone was released. Apple hasn't had year over year decrease. Thank you. So let me actually find the quote that Tim Cook said. So Tony Sakanagi, who is just a terrible analyst, in my opinion, when it comes to Apple, at least. He asked something. I don't even really care what he asked. Tim Cook said, Tony, we do think that iPhone units will decline in the quarter. We don't think that they'll decline to the level that you're talking about. We aren't projecting beyond the quarter. But at this point in time, we see that Q2 is the toughest compare. So what's going on there is the fact that in the second quarter of last year, Apple had a ridiculous March quarter last year. Apple sold 61 million iPhones. Now, keep in mind that Apple sold, how many iPhones did they sell this last quarter?
78.4 million. Does that sound about right?
Sounds about right. They did beat the previous year, which people weren't really expecting. People were actually worried about there being a decrease this last quarter. But what we're looking at is a decrease this quarter. And so what happened is that last year, Apple had a lot of pent-up demand for the iPhone 6, for a large-screen iPhone. Mm-hmm. And Apple had so much pent-up demand that it wasn't able to make enough to meet all the demand during the December quarter, and that demand spilled into the March quarter, and boom, okay. Apple sells 61 million iPhones in the March quarter. Now, that's just a ridiculous amount of iPhones. That's like more iPhones than Apple sells in any quarter other than the December quarter.
Right. So they had an anomaly last year, and
yes,
they're making it clear we're not going to have an anomaly again this year.
Right. It's what, in Wall Street parlance, is a quote-unquote tough compare. And okay. this is a very tough compare, actually. What did What did Tim Cook say? Like the toughest compare or something like that. So what he's saying is that as far as this fiscal year goes, that the second quarter is going to be Apple's toughest compare. And it is. It's going to be Apple's toughest compare. And it's not because the iPhone's choking. It's because Apple doesn't have the same kind of pent-up demand. I mean, there was a lot of pent-up demand from people who were waiting for a large screen device. The iPhone 6 was this huge, massive hit. Now, the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus are even better devices. But the S line, right? The those alternating years between the non-S and the S versions. Mm-hmm. The S usually has a lower increase in sales than the non-S versions.
Okay, so we're pretty much in line with what we would expect to be seeing this year from the patterns.
Yeah, except for in the past, Apple has still managed to always increase iPhone unit sales. That's the thing that's different. And Apple's not going to do that this quarter, according to Apple.
So right? I suppose it could happen, but considering the perfect storm that they had this time or during the quarter last year, we don't have that this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen. Apple's not going to beat last year's iPhone sales this quarter. It could on the year, but it's not going to on the quarter. It's just not. It's not going to happen. So, and that's okay. But the reason why Wall Street has reacted negatively, and the company, looking at the closing Apple share price, $93.42. That was down $6.57, or 6.57%.
Wow,
pretty sharp decline, but not really as sharp as it could have been, because a lot of these muted expectations were already baked into the price. Mm-hmm. But remember that a company's stock value is not based on what it's done; it's based on what it will do.
Right.
And if Apple is showing a hard time growing revenues, the stock price is going to reflect that. And that's precisely what has happened. That means that the today's sell-off is perfectly rational and perfectly justified. The fact that Apple just had a record quarter doesn't mean anything. It means nothing whatsoever to Wall Street. And it shouldn't mean anything to Wall Street, because Wall Street is forward-looking. Wall Street is not backwards-looking.
Right. So the people that are looking at what happened with Apple's stock today and are wailing and gnashing their teeth and thinking this is ridiculous, look at the great quarter Apple had, they're not looking at Apple's stock in the same way that investors in Wall Street do.
No, they're looking at as fans, and this drives me nuts. You know, we've been talking about this for years, but this drives me nuts. The stock price in the first place was always based on what Apple is going to do tomorrow. So when Wall Street believes that, when Wall Street says, okay, well, based on what we think you'll do to what we think you'll do tomorrow, we're going to value your stock at X amount. When Wall Street finds out that it, or when Wall Street decides, or in this case, Apple told Wall Street that they're going to do less than what Wall Street thought, Wall Street changes the value. Wall Street says, oh, okay, well, if you're only going to do X amount minus Y amount, well, in that case, we're going to value you at this price.
Okay, that makes sense.
It makes total sense. Now, that doesn't justify why Amazon's worth anything, because Amazon's never, ever going to make any money. Doesn't justify what am I trying to say here? You know, Apple's so, like, one of the things that Apple fans get really frustrated about is how Apple's price earnings ratio is way lower than other tech companies. Matter of fact, I saw a piece from someone from just a mainstream piece, not coming from any kind of Apple fan, saying pointing out that Apple's price earnings ratio is in line with how Wall Street values banks, not tech companies. And that's true, but it's because no one sees where the huge growth from Apple is going to come.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Apple is good at holding their cards close to their chest, right?
Yeah.
Chest or vest? What is it?
Vest.
Ah.
Wait. Close to your vest. Close to your chest. Close to your vest. I think it's vest.
Okay. I figured you being mostly pedantic, you'd be able to set me straight on that.
Let's vest. Actually, it seems like both are used. Whatever. Yeah. So right now, there are no products that Apple has announced that are going to provide growing revenues. And it's growing revenues that a company gets a high price to earnings multiplier from. I mean, keep in mind, you know, Apple is still worth more than $500 billion, $557 billion.
Which is just insane.
Yeah, I think it should still be, let's actually make sure that that's still the case. With Apple selling off, dropping so much. No longer Exxon or Google, Microsoft. This is 2015.
Carried the two.
It may actually still be. What is ExxonMobil? Is Zon, XOM. Real time people here. Sausage. Sausage making. Oh, yeah, yeah. Exxon's only worth $319 billion. Only.
Only.
Yeah. And let's check. Google is $246 billion. Is that right? Oh, huh. Google L is worth $213 billion. So you put two. Yeah, Google is still worth less if you count both of their class of shares. It's
how about Alphabet?
Yeah, Alphabet, right, whatever. Alphabet's value is all Google.
Yep, good point.
Yeah, Microsoft actually has kind of made somewhat of a comeback, bizarrely. Microsoft's worth $400. Yeah, all right, so Apple is still the world's most valuable company by a lot. This isn't like Wall Street is saying that Apple isn't worth anything. Wall Street is saying that Apple's not going to be able to grow as much as we thought Apple could grow. And Apple is already this enormous company. I don't know. Well,
isn't there a point where the growth that we have seen in the past is simply impractical? Because to get the percentages, Apple would have to grow at astronomical rate.
Well, that's been the argument. See, yes, this is true. There is a point at which that becomes inarguable and inescapable. Right? The question is, what is that point? Because we've actually been hearing that about Apple since the iPod. Every year, you know, oh my God, Apple has $20 billion in the bank. This is ridiculous. Apple's got to do something with this money. Apple's got $40 billion in the bank. Oh my God, this is just ridiculous. Can't believe, you know, Apple is clearly not able to do anything with that money and needs to like give it all back to shareholders. Yeah, you know, then it got up to $60 billion and then $70 billion and then $90 billion. I mean, Apple has $200 billion in the bank right now, right? So we, and as far as Apple's sales go, for years we've been hearing that Apple can't keep growing at the rates that it's growing.
And yet they keep reporting record quarter after record quarter.
Right. But now we have a record quarter that's just barely a record quarter, with guidance for a quarter that will not be a record quarter. Not only will it not be a record quarter, it will be probably a good 12% lower than it was last year.
And people are going to freak out.
Well, not well. The freaking out was done starting today.
Which is why Apple is down, would you say, $6.50?
Yeah. 6.57%. So, I mean, again, this is not even kind of irrational. This is a rational response. Apple's price to earnings multiplier is lower than other tech companies because with the information available today, Apple's opportunities for growth are lower than other tech companies.
Okay, that makes sense.
Makes total sense. It makes total sense. Now, there's a flip side.
Okay.
And the flip side is that is essentially whether or not one has faith that Apple will come out with another innovative product that brings in new substantial revenues.
And depending on who you talk to, that's a sure thing, or Apple is beyond their prime as far as making the great new revenue generating product.
Right. Yeah. It depends on, definitely depends on who you listen to. And, in the bearish camp on that front, you got the Apple Watch, which is a fine product. I think our listeners have heard me say many times it's missing key killer functionality.
Really?
Yeah. That's true.
I've heard that.
Yeah. But it certainly didn't light Apple's revenues on fire. Right?
Right. Although, if you look at the other category that the Apple Watch and Apple TV are lumped into, that's a significant amount of money. Now,
For most companies, it would be significant.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. For most companies, it's significant for me. $20 is significant for me.
Right. Right. Oh, speaking of which, I have a very tiny holding of Apple shares. Very, very tiny holding. And I am long. I'm not short.
No, you don't slouch. You're not short. That's so not what you meant.
No. But I'm not short, so I'm not betting against Apple. So, you know, I'm basically saying that Apple, that Wall Street is right to value. Anyway, I always speak my actual opinion here. I'm never trying to. I don't think that I can affect the market's outlook on Apple in the first place. Anyway, the question is, what is the other thing? You know, what else might Apple release? Well, of course, there's the big rumor of the car, mm-hmm. right? But Apple could cancel the car. Apple hasn't even announced the car yet. True. I have no doubt that all of Wall Street knows that Apple is working on a car. But there's no guarantee whatsoever that Apple will release a car. And then there's no guarantee that if Apple does release a car, that it'll sell well.
True. Not every product Apple has made has turned into a blockbuster.
To it, Apple Watch.
Apple Watch, yep.
Apple Watch is probably the single most successful wrist-top computing device on the planet.
Yep, Apple has 50% of the smartwatch market.
Stunning. But that market isn't big enough to really matter to Apple. That's the thing there, right?
Right.
And the car is years away, and we don't even know if it's actually going to see the light of day. And we haven't had any significant rumors of any other. We haven't had any rumors of other products from Apple other than me saying that I have talked to people who said that they have seen things that no rumor has ever mentioned. And that's like the grand sum total of what I know.
Which is actually kind of exciting because
yeah.
There's stuff that Apple's working on that we have no clue what it is.
Yes, that is exciting.
Yeah.
That is exciting. Now, that doesn't mean that any of those products will ever see the light of day.
True. But knowing that Apple is working on stuff that none of us have even thought of yet, that is exciting. And I imagine for Apple's competitors, kind of scary because they don't know what they need to be doing to compete with Apple in the future if they have no idea what it is that the company's working on.
True. Yeah, but that should all, the whole rest of the world surely at this point understands that their role is to simply swoop in and do their best to copy Apple.
Yeah.
Surely, right?
You would think. I mean, there are plenty of companies out there that seem to be using that as their business model.
Mm-hmm. That does seem to be the case. So, when you don't have, okay, so like for me, clearly I believe in Apple's future, right? That's mm-hmm. obvious. I have a tiny stake in Apple and I'm long. That means I'm holding it. That means that I'm holding it because I believe it's going to be worth more in the future than it's worth today.
So it's okay. A long-term investment as opposed to something that you think you can make a quick buck on.
Correct.
Okay.
If I had more money, I would buy more Apple shares. I would buy other companies too. And I do have very, very tiny stakes in a couple of other companies, including GT Advanced Technologies.
Oh, Brian.
Yeah, that's $40 I'll never see again. But, you know, I this would be a buying opportunity to me if I actually had money. Because I have faith that Apple is going to, and really it is faith. This is a faith-based belief in Apple's ability to innovate. I have faith that Apple is going to do something interesting and new, and that Apple is going to disrupt additional markets. I actually have faith that Apple is eventually going to be able to disrupt TV. When? Who knows?
Yeah. Now, I think you're right. I think Apple at some point will have a significant impact on viewing entertainment.
Mm-hmm, I also have faith. Actually, I know that Apple is working on the car, and I believe that Apple will end up entering that market. There's a mix there. So because of these things, I'm long on Apple. But there's certainly a mix of faith in that. And until Wall Street has more information, Apple's relatively low price-earnings ratio is pretty valid and rational, in my opinion.
All right. So everyone that's really upset because of Apple's earnings report, now seeing the stock value dropping, they need to look at it from an investment standpoint or investor standpoint as opposed to an emotional standpoint.
Right.
Okay.
You do not look at Apple. Don't look at Apple stock like fanboy, because fanboy love has nothing to do with Apple's valuation. It's all about what Apple's going to do tomorrow. It has nothing to do with what Apple did yesterday. In this case, literally yesterday.
You know, I used to get really upset about watching the stock value drop after an earnings report.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because at the time I didn't get that the stock market is always looking forward and they don't care about yesterday anymore. So I always felt that Apple was getting like screwed over.
I used to think so too. I used to think so too. Now, and this doesn't mean, I mean, Wall Street, the stock market is largely rigged. It is. It's just largely rigged. The big money manipulates the market. I mean, like this business going on. You know about the what do they call it? High frequency trading.
I'm familiar with the term.
Right. So this is basically where people with money and resources get computers that are as close to the computers that are running the actual stock markets as possible. That makes sense?
Yes.
And
like,
they
like as physically close as they can be.
Yes, as physically close as they could be.
Yeah, and there's a guy that started up his own exchange based on that.
Oh, there's lots of folks are doing this at this point.
Ah, okay.
Lots of folks are doing this at this point. I don't know how many exchange. I'm not familiar with what you just said, but
this was from several years ago.
Okay, and they then use their own proprietary algorithms to do automatic trading based on their ability to predict or in some cases manipulate what's happening. And they can buy in a fraction of a second before you can.
Because they are physically closer to yes. the servers.
And the computers are doing the thinking.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, this is to me, this is, this should be made illegal. This should be regulated right out of existence. It's completely, it's just complete garbage. And it's money stacking the odds against those without money. And I hate it, which is, I mean, why, you know, like day trading by people is kind of a joke at this point. You're competing against people with money and computers that are going to crush you, and they're going to take advantage of you. And then there's there's one thing. There's this movement to make traders have to pay for orders whether or not they're filled. And that's because traders have found that they can manipulate the price by putting in orders that they never intend to fill.
Huh.
And then profiting off the movement of the stock and then canceling the orders.
So they're making money by not having to spend any money.
Well, they're making money by no. They're making money. They do eventually spend some money, but they spend some money when they've decided that when their algorithms have decided that the game has been significantly influenced enough.
Ah, okay.
So by making traders actually have to pay for every trade, whether or not it's filled, the thought is that this would cut down on that particular high frequency trading scam. My guess is that, you know, they'll just find another way to do it. Anyway, the whole point is this: the stock market is rigged. I'm not telling you that the stock market isn't and by rigged. I mean, it's just controlled by the people with money. Your only chance as a normal person to make money off the stock market is to be long, in my opinion. You know, and please do not come to me for stock advice. That's just a terrible idea. but you know, something like, you know, I'm happily long on Apple, but I would never ever try to, you know, outplay the market on Apple or any other company for that matter. Because I can't outplay the market. I can only buy a company that I think is going to make more money in the future than it has in the past. And there you go.
All right. Well, I hope your insignificant shares at some point are worth a significant amount of money for you.
Well, if I hold them long enough, I imagine they will be. I hope so. They'll be worth more money than they are now. It's about all I can ask.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, you know, those of us who have been long on Apple split adjusted, I got in on Apple at $6 a share. I think even less than that on some shares. There just aren't enough of them. I wish I'd bought more at $6 a share.
Oh, well, I have a feeling there's a lot of people in the same boat.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Yeah, Apple has definitely made a bunch of millionaires, both, you know, from those of us out here and those, you know, employees that work for the company, et cetera.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Right. So there you go. There you have it.
All right.
There you have it. Oh, wait. I should add one more thing. So a lot of analysts today issued research notes to their clients talking about basically, you know, okay, you know, fine, we get it. The success is what it is. So now we're looking forward towards iPhone 7.
Right.
So, you know, that's probably going to be where a lot of the analyst focus, the analysts who are actually worth paying attention to, where their focus is going to be in the future.
And
in the near future.
Yeah. And considering Apple's track record is to release new iPhones fall-ish, mm-hmm. I'm assuming we'll be hearing more and more from analysts about iPhone 7 in the coming months.
Right. And, you know, and hopefully iPad will, I mean, are you with me here? We haven't really talked about this. You and I'm into this rumor that the iPad Air 3 is going to be announced in March.
It wouldn't surprise me. I could totally see that happening. The benefit of doing it in March is that hopefully Apple could kind of goose their iPad sales a little bit. The downside of doing it in March is that it gives their competitors more time to react or respond to what the new iPad offers before the holiday season.
Well, you know, that's an interesting thought, because I used to say that about I used to think that about the iPhone before Apple moved to the fall schedule, right? I used to think that about iPhone and to a lesser extent iPad. But on the iPad side, I think that we've pretty much proven at this point that no one gives a crap about any tablet except for iPad. Apple didn't even bother updating iPad Air this last fall. And iPad sales were definitely off year over year, but they didn't fall off a cliff during the Christmas holiday. And iPad Air 2 was still one of the big draws that retailers were using to get people in the doors.
Yeah. Yep.
So sad. I mean, no one. It's all the other tablets are just a joke. And I mean, Android tablets, no one seems to care about them at all. And if Microsoft keeps having failures, like with their NFL tie-in.
Now, Microsoft assures everyone that it was the NFL's fault and not theirs. But it doesn't matter whose fault it was. Microsoft looks bad.
Yeah, even if it was the NFL's fault, that's a problem. The NFL shouldn't be able to have a fault with the tablets. What the heck? Anyway, Surface tablets, LOL.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wonder how many of those Surface tablets that you see in the shows, because they're all like propped up. How many of them were propped up and someone has their iPad in front of it so that it's hidden by the camera?
Yeah.
I'm horrible. That's exactly what I would do.
I don't think I followed you, I'm going to be honest.
Oh, no, that's what I would do. If Microsoft was sponsoring some show that I was on and they said, oh, you have to use your Surface tablet, I'd set it up on the desk and my iPad right there so that you can't see it from the camera. And I'd be using my iPad instead.
I see. Yes.
I am like horrible.
That. Yeah. No, I guess I'm just as horrible. I wouldn't want the money. Of course, you know, if you're an employee, it would anyway, this is like a dark, dirty rabbit hole.
Yeah. Dark. Probably, dirty.
Probably don't need to go down it.
No. There are so many other rabbit holes calling to us.
Right. So I don't know. Anything else on the earnings report? Oh, yeah. There's one more thing about the earnings report that I wanted to mention.
Okay.
Luca Maestri in particular, and Tim Cook to a lesser extent, they both spent a lot. Luca is
CFO.
I thought he lived on the second floor.
He does, but he's also the CFO.
I just can't think of anything other than the song.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Luca Maestri, CFO, Apple. They both spent a lot of time talking about the headwinds that Apple faced during the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, macroeconomic conditions were tough. Currency valuations were fluctuating. That made things tough. The dollar was strong. That made things tough. Essentially, oh my goodness, we had a record quarter and you have no idea how hard it was. And you should probably be patting us on the back.
That's kind of how it felt.
Yeah. All of which is true. All of which is true. And it's stuff that is going to continue to make this year difficult. A tough compare, as it were. But I was, I was struck. I almost felt that like the opening statements were essentially apologetic or defensive.
I agree. It felt like Apple was taking a very defensive posture yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm assuming they did that because they knew, based on what they were going to say, that they needed to be ready for some negative backlash.
Probably. I mean, you know, I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy on a podcast. So you know, I don't. I've noted several times that I'm glad I'm not the person who has to guide Apple.
Yeah, you know,
Tim Cook's job is just unbelievably hard. But I don't think I would have gone on quite so long about all of the tough economic issues facing the company. I felt like it went on too long, I guess is the way.
But by the time they got to the end of their defensive speech, I was kind of ready for all the orphans to come dancing out from the sides going, "It's a hard knock life."
That's kind of awesome.
Now you can't get that out of your head, can you?
No, I can't. That's not kind of awesome. It is awesome. Yeah. But, you know, whatever. And the analysts didn't really seem to bat an eye on that stuff. They weren't. No one was going like. So, I mean, like, really? I mean, really? Was it really hard? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Well, how hard was it? Well, I mean, like, you know, how much of a role do you think the decrease in value of the yuan, you know, can you quantify that, the effect on your bottom line? I mean, like, and maybe it's because Apple was so thorough. Because Luca and Tim were so thorough. That's possible.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Right. No one asked about televisions anymore.
No. Instead, they asked about virtual reality.
Right.
It's like the best. That actually may be my actual best segue.
Yeah.
Not when I pointed out like that.
It's still your actual best segue. And the way that I fed that to you so that you could naturally do the segue, it's like no one's going to pick up on that. It was just really natural.
Right. It's a good thing. It's a good thing we didn't point it out.
Right.
Right. It's a good thing we didn't point it out. All right. So Gene Munster, our boy Gene Munster, Mr. Apple TV himself, Mr. Television Set himself.
Yep.
He had a follow-up question. We won't even bother with the question that it's a follow-up to, because it had nothing to do. It wasn't a follow-up question. It's a second question.
Yeah, he just called it a follow-up.
He called it a follow-up because analysts are allowed one question and one follow-up question. And a follow-up question really should be about some kind of clarification.
Right.
But whatevs. This is Gene Luster. Everybody loves him. So he said, I know you can't talk about new products, but any high-level thoughts on the virtual reality scene? Do you think this is more of a geeky niche or something that could go mainstream? And I hate that second sentence because it's a dumb question.
Mm-hmm.
But really, he's just trying to get Tim Cook to actually say something.
Right.
And Tim Cook kind of sort of said something. And so this is coming on the heels of the virtual reality hire.
Right. Yeah, they hired Doug.
Doug Henning?
It's magic. I can't remember his last name, but yeah, he was from Virginia Tech, and he's like one of the top experts in VR.
Let's actually get his name because we wrote a story about this. Doug Bowman.
See, Doug. It was Doug.
Yeah. By we, I mean you wrote a story about this.
Yeah, you'd think I'd be able to remember his name. Hey, I remember Doug.
By the way, you did the... I like the way you inset that Apple logo on the...
on the holodeck.
Yeah, it was nice. I also loved your iPhone image today with the two ridiculous
lenses. With the dual cameras?
Yes.
That was fun to make.
Yeah, that was solid. We'll include a link in the show notes. So anyway, they hired Doug Bowman, right?
It's magic.
He was the director of the Center for Human Computer Interaction at Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Considered one of the world's top VR experts, right?
Right.
Right. So that's why Gene Munster is asking this question, is because of this guy. And Tim Cook offered a very, very short response. He said, in terms of virtual reality, no, I don't think it's a niche. I think it can be ... It's really cool and has some interesting applications. Now, that's Tim Cook speak for, yeah, we're going to do something with virtual reality. And we don't think this is going to be some kind of niche thing. And of course, it's not going to be. Virtual reality is going to be part of the next phase in entertainment. Of course it is.
Sure. And by extension, augmented reality.
Yeah.
But whatever Apple may be considering in the virtual reality space, I'm intrigued. Because right now we have what I fondly refer to as the birth control devices, like Oculus Rift.
which are great for gaming.
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's cool stuff for gaming, but it's not that's niche level. Stuff that's gaming oriented is niche level.
Right. And it's also this big, clunky, heavy thing that hangs off the front of your face.
Yeah, but that'll change, right?
Of course.
As time goes, those devices will get smaller and smaller. But they're stepping stone devices.
Oh, sure.
You know, at some point, we need to be in... Yeah, I'm in my sci-fi book, which is set fairly far in the future, 123 years in the future, including decades of turmoil that essentially, you know, wrecks technology improvements.
Right. So we need to get on the turmoil part so that your book can be totally accurate.
Yeah, I don't really want that, though.
No, neither do I.
So, I mean, the you know, virtual reality for those folks is it's you lie down and you've got the sensor mesh that covers you and you've got something on your head, and then you jump into the virtual world and everything is real to you. It's as if you're walking around in the real world, or, you know, wherever, you know, you feel stuff. That, I mean, doing that level of virtual reality to me, at that point will mostly become a bunch of, you know, people who live their lives that way.
Sure. We'll become the couch potatoes our parents were always afraid we would be.
Right. Except for we will actually be doing things in the virtual world, and they will be just as real to us as you know, walking around the real world today. And a philosophical argument will go on and rage probably for a very long time over what is real. And, you know, some people will say that the false stuff is false, and other people will say, well, you know, screw you. It's just as real as your stuff, whatever. And between that, between the glasses today and these and the thing where you can actually feel things that don't actually happen to your body, but they feel like they do. In between that, there will be some kind of immersive environment where you know you can walk around in a holodeck, some kind of holodecky thingy,
which is going to be really cool.
Yeah, that kind of seems, and what you know, we'll have that cyberpunk phase where people can jack in the hard way.
Man, the fact that you know lines like that makes you cooler in my book.
So, virtual reality, there's no way virtual reality is going to remain niche. It's going to have niche applications that slowly expand into the real world. You know, I mean, like we're already seeing some of the stuff where people will be able to see what they would look like with makeup on. Mm-hmm. with a particular makeup on. That's going to be aimed at
or try on clothes virtually.
That's happening right now too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's all kinds of things like that.
Yeah. Knowing that Apple has a real interest in VR is pretty exciting, I think, because instead of looking at this from the same angle that many other companies have, Apple's going to look at it, I think, more from the human aspect, which means that that instead of being clunky attachments that we have to strap around our faces, they'll be looking at how do we make this more natural and how do we make this something that people really want to interact within.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Facebook bought Oculus Rift, and they're looking at it from the standpoint of they want people interacting with each other so that, you know, they can slurp up that information and then sell it to advertisers, right?
Right.
I think that Apple's take on virtual reality is going to be more forward thinking and is going to be I don't think it's going to be driven. It certainly won't be driven by advertising needs. And I don't think it's going to be driven by something as near future as people being able to interact with each other across the internet. I think that Facebook's stated outlook on virtual reality is a little bit myopic, a little bit in the box.
So, do you have any ideas of what you would like to see Apple do with virtual reality?
Well, yeah, make us a deck. An immersion deck.
That would be really cool.
But that's not going to be anytime soon.
Well, Apple is not a short-term player. They're always looking way ahead.
Yeah, I wonder if Apple's virtual reality play is aimed somewhat at the car and the car dash and the
that wouldn't surprise me at all.
And, you know, a heads-up display on your windshield.
Yeah, how about a heads-up display that when you have bad visibility, it recreates what the road looks like for you so that you, in essence, can see through the bad visibility, like white-out snowstorms.
Hmm. Would you really, though? Would you actually want all that snow gone? I think you kind of need to see what you're actually on.
Well, you still have the snow. But
are you thinking kind of like the FLIR, where they're projecting the outline of visual light onto the results of the thermal imaging?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Surely Apple could do bigger than that, though.
Of course they can do bigger than that. And they're thinking much farther down the road than what I'm thinking right now. But that would be kind of neat to augment your vision when you're in your car.
Yeah, augment it with more than advertising and directions.
Yes.
I mean, you know, because that's a big part of what Google Glass is about, is, you know, just about getting more advertising, you know, like, you know, moving their advertising from the flat screen to the real world. Yay.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Did you hear they're shutting, Google is shutting down all of the consumer social stuff that they were doing for Google Glass and just leaving the enterprise stuff in place for now?
No, I didn't hear that.
I just heard that. So I'm not sure what their next plan is for Google Glass. Yeah. Anyhow, yeah. I'm really interested in seeing what Apple brings to the table.
Well, and this is one of those things that knowing, you know, in this case, we know that Apple is doing something in the virtual reality space because they hired one of the top VR people.
They also have some companies that they bought over the past like 2 years.
Yeah, including some augmented reality stuff, right?
Yes. Yes. Facial recognition software company that does the recognition in real time. So you could make yourself appear to someone else as whatever you want to be.
Someone else who is tied into the same system you are.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Right. So we know that Apple's doing something. This is, again, this is part of my personal faith that Apple is going to disrupt more markets in the future. I believe that Apple is going to do something with this. And I believe that this will eventually have a material impact on the company's bottom line.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I'm pretty excited to see where they go.
So am I, but we'll probably have to look at that in a future podcast because
we are pretty much out of time.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think.
I hit the music.
so you did. Let us know what you think, though. What do we got there? We got that thing.
Yeah, we have that thing. So the
Twitter thing.
Yeah, we have the Twitter thing. The Twitter thing is @ContextMachine.
@ContextMachine, right. Let us know what you think there. Write us at acm@macobserver.com.
Right.
So I'm sorry. I totally ruined our outro rhythm.
No, that's okay. Why didn't you say the part about CacheFly and Boom?
CacheFly. Well, they do our bandwidth, which is really great. Cool. The bass was recorded by Boom just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Top men.